Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to Buffalo Means Business on News Radio 930 WBEN, and this is where we hear from the businesses and services available in the Buffalo area. If you'd like to be on the program, send me an email at randy.bushover@entercom.com. Joined by Arthur Pressman, attorney with Arthur Pressman Law, which, ironically enough, works out very well, right? And we've had you on before a couple times in your specialties, DWIs, traffic violations, criminal defense. Any druthers as to where you'd like to start today's segment?
No, it was nice to be back again, Randy. Thank you for having me. You know, my practice is limited to those areas. I've been doing this for almost 35 years now, and over 30 of it in the Buffalo area. I started my career down in Miami, Florida, in the mid-80s, practicing criminal defense down there, and moved back to Buffalo in the late 80s and have been working in that field since then.
Was there a particular reason you chose those areas of law to pursue?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think a lot of lawyers get their start when they are in law school and they are looking for a part-time job, and they clerk, we call it clerking, for a law firm. And I just happened to start clerking for a very prominent criminal defense law firm in Miami, Florida, and it was during the heyday of the cocaine cowboys in the mid-1980s. It was a very exciting area to be in at the time, and I just found that I enjoyed doing that kind of work, and I stuck with it.
And I have a perception that the job entails a lot of the research. So is that true? And is that, again, what helped you kind of gain all of the knowledge that helps you in the practice today?
Well, you know, criminal law, it really depends on the kind of areas that you focus in. I mean, all law requires preparation and research. Obviously, the more sophisticated cases requires more research and more preparation. So every case that comes into my office, we treat as a unique case, and everyone's facts are always different. So when I look at a case and evaluate a case, I prepare and research it based on your unique facts of the case. So, you know, one thing about law is nothing is ever the same, and that's how we keep ourselves interested, by looking for different things that are unique, that might stand out, that is different from the case before it. And actually, I actually enjoy it, because as in any profession, things can get repetitive, and I'm always looking for something that stands out and is different, because it does excite me and it is intellectually stimulating, and it's always more fun. And I hate to use that word in describing a criminal case, but it's more challenging when I can actually sink my teeth into something that's different than the ordinary.
And what has specifically changed for all attorneys, not just for you with the DWI, traffic violations, criminal defense, et cetera, the notion of advertising? You used to never have to go out there in the media, whether it be print, radio, TV, to get extra business. But is that something now that has helped, or is it just made things more difficult for you?
Well, in the old days, we were actually prohibited by our ethics to even advertise at all. I mean, you couldn't do any advertising whatsoever. And over the years, obviously, everyone is advertising, and it's become a much more competitive field. You know, I advertise. I like to get my name out there, because I think I have something to offer that is unique to other lawyers that are practicing in my field. The advertising certainly creates a brand awareness and a brand name for me. But the bottom line is I have to, when I meet with people and talk to them on the phone and meet with them in person, I have to be able to instill some confidence in them that I can defend them to best of my abilities and get a good result. And hopefully they come away from the situation in the best possible position. So the advertising is certainly very useful for me, but in the end of the day, I am really selling my abilities and myself and what my firm can do for you that you know, results in a positive outcome to your case.
And having said all of that, with a DWI, necessarily you're getting someone, obviously, after something has occurred. Is that best case scenario, or should people have some awareness of what they should or shouldn't do as the incident happens, if the unfortunate occurrence does happen?
Well, obviously the first thing I would tell people is, you know, we don't want people drinking and driving because it affects all of us. I mean, you know, I make my living defending people who are drinking and driving, but I would never condone or endorse someone to go out and drink and drive. So that's obviously you have to be self-aware that you cannot drink and drive. You know, when they come to me, it's already after the fact. There's a couple of things that people can do. If they get pulled over and the police begin a DWI investigation, you have to be polite. You have to be cooperative. But being cooperative doesn't necessarily mean that you have to perform the tests and physical tests that the police are asking of you. There's nothing wrong with refusing to do certain tests. It doesn't necessarily hurt your interest. It's not going to make the police officer mad. They know that you have a right to refuse to do certain tests. And oftentimes, if someone is intoxicated, not performing these tests puts them in a better position when they go to court with their attorney, with someone like me. So, you know, just to break it down in general terms, the typical DWI arrest occurs when someone is usually pulled over for a traffic violation, like a speeding ticket or not staying in their lane. And once the police officer begins their investigation and takes you out of the vehicle, they usually will offer you what are called roadside field sobriety tests, and we call those FSTs. Those are tools that the police use to determine whether or not they believe that you are showing signs of intoxication or impairment by drugs. And, you know, a lot of these we've seen on TV or heard of, like, you know, touching your finger to your nose or walking a straight line or saying the alphabet. And these are all tools that they use that have been training to determine whether or not you're intoxicated. Every individual who gets pulled over does not have to take those tests. You can refuse those tests. And most people are not aware of that. Most people are aware of the fact that you can refuse to take a breath test back at the police station. But you do not have to take those roadside physical tests. And wearing my defense attorney's hat, I would tell people that if you believe you're intoxicated, you should not take those tests. You just be polite and say, I refuse to take those tests. The other thing we just mentioned, I just touched on, was the breath test back at the police station. Again, if someone is highly intoxicated or you feel you're intoxicated, oftentimes it's best not to take the test. It just depends on the situation. It's not a black and white area anymore whether you should take the test or not, like it used to be maybe 15 or 20 years ago. Everyone should be aware of that. If you refuse to take a chemical test in New York State, whether it's a breath test or a blood test or a urine test, that DMV can penalize you if they find that you voluntarily refuse to take the test. And that is a revocation up to 12 months for a first offense and a $500 civil penalty. And that's regardless of how you, what the outcome of the case is. So even if you were found not guilty or acquitted in a criminal case, you still can get penalized or sanctioned by DMV for refusing to take a chemical test. So again, it's not black and white. There are so many different variables. If someone were to call me in the middle of the night and ask whether they should take a test, I need to ask them certain questions to try and determine whether it's the best thing for them to do.
Gotcha. You're listening to Buffalo Means Business on News Radio 930 WBEN. We're in conversation with Attorney Arthur Pressman of Arthur Pressman Law. Also, there have been some changes regarding blood alcohol readings, and I guess what, their acquisition or the use?
Well, it really haven't been changes. I mean, it's a 0.08 is the legal limit in New York State. 15, 20 years ago, it was 0.10, and that's a blood alcohol content. We also have something in New York State which most people are not aware of. It's called drive while impaired by alcohol. That's if you have a blood test concentration of 0.06 or 0.07% alcohol in your blood. And that's actually, I think people would be surprised. It doesn't take very many drinks for people to get to the level of a 0.06. It might, you know, for a woman who doesn't weigh a lot, it could be 1.5 drinks to get to a 0.06. A man, it could be 3 or 4 drinks in an hour or less. And you could be legally impaired by alcohol and be arrested and charged. And I do have clients over the years who are charged with what we call low reading tests. But it's still illegal in New York State to drive with a blood alcohol content of a 0.06 or higher. There has been some legislative rumblings about lowering the breath test to a 0.05, but the legislature in New York State has not passed any law yet lowering it from 0.08 to a 0.05. I think in Ontario, though, it's a lower number, though.
When it comes to driving while ability impaired, and specifically I'm referring to drug use now, where there is no blood alcohol content, so what determination or what factors do they use to make a determination about your abilities there?
That's a good question, Randy, because I think a lot of people are not aware that driving while impaired by drugs basically has the same penalties as driving while intoxicated by alcohol. And you could be impaired by drugs, either using recreational drugs, the most common one is usually marijuana, but you can also be charged with and convicted of driving while impaired by drugs using a prescription medication that you have legally prescribed for you and that you take every day. What I've come across is clients who are taking a prescription medication that it just has a bad effect on them that day, or they've taken too many, or they've mixed it with alcohol, which kind of increases the effect of the impairment. So impaired by drugs, the only difference really in between driving while intoxicated and impaired by drugs is that if you were convicted of driving while intoxicated in New York State, even on a first offense, you'd have to install an interlock ignition device in your vehicle to start your car. It's like a portable breath test device you have to blow into to start your car. If you're convicted of driving while impaired by drugs, you do not have to install it in your vehicle. But the penalties as far as the revocation periods are the same, the fines are the same, and the restrictions on your licenses are the same, whether you're convicted of driving while impaired by alcohol or drugs. And I often address in groups sometimes young adults who are, smoking marijuana is very common. It's not legal yet in New York State, but even if it was legalized, it would be the same as alcohol, that if you're impaired by it and you'd get behind the wheel, you can be charged and convicted of it. And it's not the best idea to get in a vehicle with a burning blunt or marijuana cigarette and drive around, and then when you get pulled over for running a stop sign, you roll down your window, first thing the officer is going to smell is that aroma of marijuana coming out of the car, and you're off to the races then.
Another area that we mentioned at the top that you help with is those people who have run afoul of traffic violations. So how is it that you can help people who, shall we say, acquire one or two or three?
It's a very large part of my practice is defending people that get charged with traffic tickets throughout Western New York and actually throughout New York State, other than really downstate New York and the New York City area. So I do represent a lot of individuals, especially that are local or from Ontario or people that are passing through. I have a lot of Canadian clients, actually, and I really enjoy helping them out because what a lot of people don't realize is that if you get points in New York State, has reciprocity, we call it, with around 46 other states, where they'll notify your state DMV, or let's say in Ontario, if you get points here. So it's important that if someone gets pulled over for any type of traffic ticket to contact me or contact an attorney that focuses their practice on this, because the points have a lot of implications as far as points on your license, which could wind up getting you suspended, insurance, and fines. One thing I wanted to highlight to you and to the listeners is that over the last couple of years, DMV has been looking back at people's driving histories 25 years. They didn't used to do that, really. And tickets that you got years ago could affect your license today if you just mail in your ticket and plead guilty. I have people who call me on a regular basis who got a ticket, don't think anything of it, mail it in, plead guilty, and then they get a letter from DMV saying their license is suspended. And the reason is that 20 years ago, they may have had two DWIs, they may have had two cell phone violations or a reckless driving, and they pled guilty to a certain type of traffic ticket now, and it suspends their license. So my advice to anyone listening is if you get a traffic ticket, please contact us, and we will defend you. And depending on the circumstances, in most cases, we'll be able to save you a trip to court. We will send in all your paperwork for you, and our goal is always to try and get you as few points as possible. Oftentimes, we can get you 0 points and just a small fine from the court.
From what I understand, this phone number will work to get a hold of you, 261-4977?
That's correct. You can call that number. We have someone answering it 24/7 every day of the week. Almost all the calls are directed right towards me. I like to speak to people in person, but if I don't pick up, either my secretary or my answering service will. You can also contact us at our website, ArthurPressmanLaw.com. Again, that's ArthurPressmanLaw.com. Or we have a little boutique website. It's called TicketToJustice.com. So either one of those will work, and you can find us. And we have online chat that's live 24/7 as well, and people have questions. They can have an online chat with someone who's available 24/7.
And again, the number, for those who would prefer to go that way, 261-4977. Don't want to give short shrift. We spent a lot of time talking DWI traffic violations, but the criminal defense part of what you handle includes drug crimes, domestic violence, fraud, theft, and violent crimes as well. Arthur, good to have you by again.
Thank you, Randy. It was a pleasure being here, and have a nice weekend.
Arthur Pressman, attorney with Arthur Pressman Law, and this is Buffalo Means Business on News Radio 930 WDBEN.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.